Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Just a few moments ago, we started the rains retreat. In a few moments' time, it's a couple of days, it's only a few moments, we extend the rains retreat. A few moments afterwards, we start another one. This is the impermanence of our life. Situations change. But what doesn't change is the inclinations of our mind. It's those inclinations which are the most important. As we've been practicing the last few months, we've been training our mind to lean in a certain direction. And as the rains retreat finishes, you'll find out just whether you've been practicing well during this rains retreat, by whether that inclination is maintained when the retreat finishes and when we get more involved in other things. When there's more activity, there's more travel, there's more people coming and going. It's the inclinations of the mind which are the most important. And those inclinations should be, you know, inclining towards restraint, inclining towards peace, inclining towards letting go, inclining towards compassion, inclining towards joy. All these inclinations which we develop during our meditation. It's as if our meditation is a gym where we train the muscles of our mind. I've used that word a lot, the muscles of the mind, because sometimes people's minds are very weak. Because they're very weak, they're very sensitive to the ups and downs of life, to the things which come and go in the world. And you know that you're sensitive when you get upset or you get elated, when the mind moves from its stable position of being in the middle. And if that's the case, you always get moved around by moods, by happiness and suffering, praise and blame, and all those loka dhammas. You know, you haven't inclined towards these dhammas strong enough. It's in the meditation retreats which we do, either the personal retreats of 2 weeks throughout the year, or during the range retreats, we get this inclination of the mind, the leaning of the mind towards certain things. And that's something which you have to be honest with, because, you know, you see that either in the retreat periods or the busy periods. Where does the mind actually lean to find its happiness, to find its stability, to find its refuge? Is it really taking refuge in the peaceful states of mind? Or does it take refuge in activity, in thinking, in doing things, in planning, in criticizing? We do take refuge in all those areas sometimes, and those are wrong areas to take refuge in. We take refuge in it because sometimes that this is where, again, you build our identity up of being the critic, being the fault finder. And you find that if you do that in your meditation to yourself, when you're meditating, always thinking of what's gone wrong in the meditation, seeing what's missing, seeing the faults. As I mentioned many times, there's no way you can get into deep meditation that way. The meditating mind should, instead of being fault finding, should be forgiving. Having the sense of loving kindness, the sense of letting go of the past, which is what forgiving is. You're letting go of what's happened. Doesn't matter what's happened throughout the last, 11 and a half weeks of the rains retreat. Doesn't matter what's happened in the past. Good meditations, bad meditations, we cannot afford to carry those around with us. We have to let them go. We incline to letting go of the past. And you do that with whatever's happened, with personal conflicts, unpleasant moments or pleasant moments. We forgive. Forgive is just a way of letting go of the past. It's marvelous when you can do that, because then you don't dwell in this terrible place of the past. You don't fill the moments with the past. If you fill the moments with the past, whenever can you see the Dhamma of the present? So in our retreat, we incline towards letting go of the past. So we're just in the moment, just now, And that way that when you come out for retreats and you go off into the world, it is so easy. Because there isn't many days of work, all there is a moment of work or a moment of rest. You don't carry things around, you don't allow the time to smear its sticky stuff all over the time. When you're working, you just work, afterwards you finish. When you eat, you just eat, afterwards you just don't even think about it. When you're meditating, you meditate, just in the moment, that's all there is, just now. So it's this inclining towards letting go is the important thing, because you're inclining towards peace, not activity. Sometimes you look at all the activity which we do here. Some of it is necessary, but a lot of it is just running away. Just escapism, just doing things for the sake of doing it. Not necessary, no need to be done, but why do we do it? Because we're afraid of peace, or we're not comfortable with peace. In our meditations, we have to incline, not just towards letting go of the past, not just to not thinking about the future. I should have really mentioned that. Because, was it 2 or 3 days to the end of the range retreat? Who knows? We may not make it. Some of us might die before the end of the range retreat. Who knows? Or, you know that there's a special provision in the Vinaya that we can, if we're having all a good time, we can actually extend the range retreat for another 2 weeks or a month. So who knows, it might not end. The point is that we don't anticipate the future. All of you who will be leaving after the range retreat, who knows, you might not leave, it's all uncertain. Whatever it is, don't waste this moment by just thinking about the future. How much of your life have you already wasted planning and remembering, inclining anywhere except into the present moment? So this is what the range retreat does. It teaches us to incline into the moment, to incline into the present time now. And the more you sort of develop that tendency of that mind, that inclination, that habit of the mind, the more easier it is to let go of past and future. You're training that muscle of the mind of inclining to letting go of time. And it's so important to do. I had a very good experience when I started my retreat, about 3 weeks or something ago, that as soon as I started, you know, just the first morning, I started having some good meditation. As if my mind, as soon as I didn't have to do anything, straight away it just inclined automatically into just resting, being still, being peaceful, having nice meditations. It almost, you know, I didn't need to even tell it. It was just like this well-trained dog. As soon as it had the opportunity, off it went. Now, when you have the opportunity, where do you go? Where do you incline? Where do you take your refuge? Is it in some company? Is it in sleep? Is it in talking? Is it in building? Is it in doing things? Where do you actually find your refuge? By refuge here, I mean, where does your mind incline to when you let it go? This is actually how our training becomes quite clear to us, exactly what we've been doing all this time. If it inclines towards, say, the present moment, if it inclines towards silence, if it inclines towards peacefulness, we know we've actually really developed something in our minds. If it always inclines towards thinking and manipulating, managing, whatever, we know that we've gone in the wrong direction. So we bring up peacefulness, we bring up silence more and more and more until it becomes such an inclination of the mind that when given half the chance, just the mind just stops. It doesn't want to think because it's inclined towards there more and more and more. And one of the reasons why the inclination strengthens is because you realize just how happy it is being silent, how happy it is being in the moment, how happy it is not having to do things. How happy it is not to have to think and fault find. We're just peaceful, quiet people, that's all. What was it in the suttas? I think Venerable Aniruddha would never actually fault find. He could never really criticize any monk. And the Buddha sort of excused him for that, for saying that, you know, that's not his strength. He was just this beautiful monk who taught by inspiration, not by finding fault. And that was just his nature. You can understand how he inclined towards that. And he was obviously a great, great monk. And this is actually the inclinations which we develop in our life. We have the inclination of developing towards compassion, and loving kindness towards all the people who have we've lived with in this monastery. It's very hard to live by oneself. If you live by yourself anywhere in the world, you have to do most of the work for yourself. And all of you who have had a nice arranged retreat didn't need to do very much. Now think of all the others who've actually done that work for you. All the others who have brought food here, who've actually given the donations, who've built your huts, maintained them, looked after them, so that you can come and stay here. We also incline towards gratitude for others. And when you have that gratitude for others, for your supporters and for your friends in monastic life, that's also an inclination which brings happiness and which brings joy to the mind. You know, it's the inclination of gratitude, the inclination of loving kindness, the inclination of softness. The mind can never get into deep meditation when it's hard. You do need that soft state of mind. And I've mentioned that to people before, that it seems to be that those women who meditate tend, this is on retreats, on my meditation retreats for lay people, so women tend to get the deep meditations much more than the men, simply because that they're softer in their attitude, in their mind. They're not so hard and forceful. And also I mentioned that those deep meditation states are very much emotional states, non-intellectual states. And again, that feminine mind is more easy and more able to embrace those states, just as they are, without trying to fault find or think about them. This is only a great generalization, because obviously there are many great monks who are good meditators and nuns who aren't, but this is a generalization here. But what it means is that inclination just to have these soft states of mind like gratitude and loving kindness and compassion are just so important to our practice of meditation, to our practice of Dhamma, to the realization of the path. So we also incline our minds as much as possible to this softness, to this friendliness, to this gratitude towards one another. And it's certainly an inclination in my mind, because I've got enormous gratitude towards all the people who have helped me in my life as a monk. Enormous gratitude. I got even into trouble on Friday because there was one man is now living in Singapore. And when I was a young monk in a monastery in Bangkok, this man was also a monk, a couple of years senior to me, and he was the only one in the monastery who could speak English. And so he took me under his wing for the first month or two, and he looked after me. And of course I've got enormous gratitude for someone like that in those first few weeks of monastic life, teaching me the ropes. And I managed to get through those first weeks, those first months, and become a nice monk and enjoying my monkhood. And so I got great gratitude for him. He disrobed some years ago. And when he wrote and asked if he could actually get all the newsletters, I suggested to the committee, oh, why don't we give him all the newsletters for free, because it's out of gratitude to me. But, the committee have to keep all the regulations, so they can't really do that. But again, that's just an example of just the gratitude one has to people who have helped you. When you have that sort of gratitude, it's something which the Buddha said is very, very skillful, very, very wholesome, because it softens the mind, and it makes the mind less demanding. They say in the Metta Sutta, be not so demanding in nature. So we don't demand much of others, we're just so thankful they're here. We're so thankful all the people who come and bought food for us during the rains retreat. It doesn't matter nice food or rotten food, or whether they sort of said this or said that. Just so grateful they just came here all this way and fed us so well. With that mind of gratitude, what it does is you're inclining to this soft, beautiful state of mind. And you're also grateful to oneself for all the hard work one has put in to the rains retreat. Now sometimes you may think that you haven't done as much as you could. sometimes you think maybe you were lazy or you wasted a bit of time here or said the wrong thing there. But don't go lingering on one's faults. Be so grateful that you work so hard all the times when you did do all the right things. Be grateful for that. And when you focus on the beautiful side of monastic life, gratitude, kindness, you find that that is that nature of the mind which will tend to lead into still states, which will lead into liberations of the mind, which will lead, as they say, these are the apamana states, the states of like no measuring. They call them like boundless states, but it really means it's just no measuring there at all. When you have states like loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, states like of gratitude. And that sort of non-measuring, that sort of softness, that beauty, if you want to incline towards that, get that as a great inclination of the mind, then whether one is working or whether one is sitting quietly in one's hut, whether one is walking meditation or one is eating, you've got this very beautiful, skillful state of mind. So beautiful that you're actually continuing sort of the causes, maintaining the causes which lead to the full liberation from samsara. You're building up wholesome mind states. And when we incline towards this more and more, the mind becomes more and more beautiful. So that's why you find that whether you're busy or whether you're by yourself, whether you're working or whether you're still, whether you're eating or you're about to go to sleep, the mind is bright and beautiful. Because it's inclined towards positive, skillful states of mind. It inclines towards awareness, this beautiful state where you see what you're doing. You're interested in what's going on. You're interested in what's going on because there is something still for you to do. Now, you hasn't reached the goal yet. There's still things to achieve. There's still things to develop. There's still problems and difficulties on the path for you. There's still dangers lurking there. Because there are still dangers in the path towards liberation, because one hasn't got to safety yet, therefore one is mindful, one is alert to the dangers. And you all know what your dangers are. You've been practicing for long enough now. And one sees one's bad habits, the silly things which one does. And so the mindfulness sort of checks. It checks and restrains and guards, so that one doesn't fall into so many bad habits in the future. And you know that beautiful way of developing that type of mindfulness is actually to keep on programming yourself, to telling yourself about your weaknesses, to guard them. Please be honest about them, don't be proud and vain, think they're not there. Be honest about them and listen to your fellows in monastic life, especially your teachers who point these things out. And if they're a recurring problem, then just even every morning tell yourself, today I'll be very careful not to talk too much. Today I'll be very careful to be more respectful to the senior monks. Or today I'll be very careful not to eat too much. Whatever it is, your problem. And then just tell yourself every morning, almost as like a reflection, as a chant. And then you find that you are programming your mindfulness, you're teaching it. So the mindfulness is always going to be alert and aware to your great dangers. You're inclining yourself to that degree of mindfulness, which is a beautiful way of like restraining the difficulties of the mind or the problems of the mind. Because sometimes if you're always on top of the mind every moment you try and force mindfulness, it never works. You just get tense and you just can't maintain it. Just have to carefully, precisely, just tell the mind exactly what you want it to do. And it's amazing how it will always follow. It's the mind is actually can be very, very sensitive to these things. And of course, you all know that I mentioned that programming of mindfulness as an important ingredient, important skill to the attaining of the very deep states of mind. But it's also very useful just for the ordinary problems of one's life. So be willing to train the mind, to incline the mind towards that mindfulness. And when that becomes an inclination, it's an inclination to be alert, to be willing to be trained. And if one has those inclinations, they last not just throughout the range retreat, they last throughout the whole year, they last throughout your whole monastic life. You're building up these things which will look after you and care for you. But the one inclination I probably like most of all is the inclination towards peace. This wonderful word of peace, because you can feel it when it arrives. You know what peace means as an experience. And when you develop present moment awareness, silence, and a bit of focusing on a breath or on a nimitta or even deeper. And that peace, if that's one's inclination, always to find peaceful states of mind, peaceful situations, you find you have an inclination which is just so powerful, it takes you into the deepest states of meditation at any time. Simply because the mind is leaning, almost attracted, almost pulled towards that where it's inclined for so long. It's an inclination, especially if one has experience peace many, many times, and recognize the happiness of those states. If one has recognized just how delightful are the peaceful states of mind, please never think of them as attachments. Think of those as wisdom, as openings, as realizations. And the more one recognizes those as beautiful, peaceful, delightful states, then one will incline towards those things. Naturally, when the mind's got nothing to do, it just goes to the peaceful states. It's got a few minutes, a few moments, even a second or two, when it's nothing really to do. And what's it do instead of like thinking, instead of fantasizing, instead of remembering, instead of looking, what should I do next? It just inclines by its nature, because it's been trained. Just to be peaceful, to be still. Not to do anything, but just to go back to that peaceful abiding deep inside. You can understand just how that will be a great resource for you, a true refuge in your life. A few moments when the work stops, instead of complaining, instead of talking, instead of wondering what to do next, just the mind stops and inclines towards that peaceful state where it can truly rest. In the evening, in the morning when you wake up, it just inclines to peace, simply because that's where it's found its happiness before, and that's where it just wants to go again, and you let it. And then you can understand how you become a person who walks around with peace as their refuge, as peace as their treasure, as peace as their possession in life. When somebody asks you, what do you possess as a monk? You say, I possess peace. Because you carry it around with you wherever you go. And you're always inclining towards it. Always going back to it. Always, whenever the mind's got nothing to do, it just goes there. And when those inclinations sort of build up and build up and build up, and the times when normal people won't be able to practice, in sickness or in pain, in your old age, at your death, that inclination, because it's been built up over the years of monastic life, built up and built up, of course it has to happen that way. That you're very, very in great pain. What does the mind do? It just inclines towards peace, to letting go. Because it's been doing that all its life. When you become very old, you just incline towards peace. When you're about to die, where do you go? You just incline towards that peacefulness. Just the mind goes there by itself. In those cases, in the difficulties, in the trials, in the crises of life, that's where you find out where you've been inclining towards all your life. Because at those times, you lose control. And you cannot sort of just put on an act the time you're dying, or in the time of a crisis. That's where you find out, as I say, what you're really made of. That's where you find out what you've been doing all your life. in the moments of great difficulty. And if you truly have been inclining in the right direction, you have been inclining towards peace, present moment awareness or silence, whatever it is, compassion, whatever you've been inclining towards, that's what will manifest at those times. That's why they always say that's when you can really find out how far a person's gone in their meditation. If they're an arahat or an anagami or whatever, just when they're in a big crisis. And then you know, or you get some indication anyway, of the inclinations of the mind. So we've been practicing those inclinations for the last 3 months. And those inclinations, if you've been practicing well, if you haven't been wasting your time during this range retreat, you'll find that they will carry on quite naturally throughout the rest of the year. And then you'll find it's a seamless transition from range retreat to outside, to the next range retreat, to outside the range retreat. They'll carry on seamlessly with you as staying here in this monastery, or going overseas, or going interstate to another monastery or whatever. Because the inclinations, the karma, the tendencies, the habitual tendencies, those are the things which continue on, the momentum of your practice. And of course those inclinations are supported by whatever insights which you have. It's the insights which work together with those inclinations. The insight into non-self helps us incline towards peace, because the wisdom shows there's nothing there. The insights into suffering and to happiness, I've already mentioned that. You see the world of things, of sensory delights or sensory whatever it is, sensory business. You see that that's just so much suffering. And as they say, that it's any person who indulges in the sensory desires, it's fun for a few minutes, but you have to pay it back afterwards with interest. It's apasukha bahudukha. Little fun, but a lot of suffering afterwards. The toast you had this morning, those people who worked, only lasted for a minute or two, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but you had to work for 2 hours. Not much of a good deal, was it? Apasukha, little happiness, bahudukha, much trouble. And that's the thing, what happens in life. And this is actually why, if we have a bit of wisdom of what real happiness is and what suffering is, we're always inclined towards the peaceful states of mind. We're always inclined towards letting go. We're always inclined towards simplicity. We're always inclined towards compassion. And loving kindness, forgiveness. I don't know why people always carry around sort of old stuff, what another person said or did. Doesn't make any sense to me at all, carrying around old things. If you're going to carry around old things, at least carry around the good memories and the nice things which somebody did to you. And maybe all the rotten things, the bad things, that sort of stuff, yeah, just throw it all away. Now why allow yourself to become unhappy and miserable? You've got the choice, and I always choose the happy states of mind. So I only remember from this range retreat all the nice things which you did and said, any sort of stupid, rotten, bad, idiotic things which anyone in this monastery has done, I've just completely forgotten, forgive, gone, finished. That way, that I may not be a very responsible abbot, but I'm having a good time. I asked Ajahn Liam when I was in Thailand just before the range retreat, say, are the monks here easy to teach? He said, yeah, they're very easy to teach. Because I don't bother. He said, I'll tell them what to do, but if they follow what I say, that's up to them. He doesn't worry about them. And he's a great monk. I really respect Ajahn Liam. What he was actually saying over there, he was teaching by example, and not holding on to the silliness of his disciples, but holding on to their good qualities. And that way, that you can follow that. If I'm irresponsible, then surely you can be, in that respect. You've got no responsibility at all in those areas, so let go of that person. Just incline towards freedom, peace, liberty, happiness. So the insights into happiness and into suffering are those which encourage and reinforce the inclinations of our mind. The inclinations of impermanence. You know, what's the point of all this? People change. You can't even fix yourself, pin yourself down who you are. How can you pin anyone else down and judge them and put them into a box and say they're this or that? I've seen people changing all the time. And just they show me amazing different facets of their characters. So that impermanence there means they can't judge or say what they were like, but doesn't mean they're like that now. Just the same as myself. I make a mistake, but that was a few moments ago, not now. That impermanence, that change when things completely vanish altogether, a new thing arises afterwards. How can you judge a person anyway? What are you judging? You're just judging rupa and vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana. What are you actually saying? You've got a silly body, or you've got a silly vedana, or you know, you've got stupid sanya, or your, you know, sankaras are really crazy. You can't say those things. It doesn't make any sense when you divide a person into their five khandhas. Nor can you say that, you know, you're such a wonderful vijnana. These things just come and they go, that's all they are. So the understanding impermanence, understanding anatta, helps you incline towards peacefulness, because you find you can't hold on to anything anyway. It inclines towards compassion, because nothing there, you might as well be compassionate about it. It inclines towards no silence, nothing to be said. When you incline towards these things, you're inclining towards peace, towards freedom. And all the insights you get, if they're real insights, as I was saying last week, if it's true wisdom, they should lead towards those peaceful states, those states of letting go, the states of renunciation. So the whole talk even last week was pointing in just another way, the inclination of the mind. Because the Dhamma inclines in those directions. And if you've been practicing the Dhamma, if you've understood the Dhamma, then the mind will be inclining in the direction of the Dhamma, which is all towards, you know, upasama, peace, wisdom, liberation, freedom, all those beautiful words. So we develop those inclinations, we cultivate them, we continue them, until they get stronger and stronger and stronger. Until they become much stronger than the old inclinations called the asavas. Maybe before we came to a monastery such as this, we inclined towards sensory pleasure as our refuge. Whenever the mind had a few moments, it looked what it can fill up its mind, fill up its stomach, fill up its mind with. Always inclined towards sensory pleasure. Or, you know, we're inclining towards thinking. We're always celebrating the wonder of thought and whatever. We just don't incline towards that anymore. We incline towards silence. Always incline towards planning and remembering, writing our memoirs, planning what we're going to do next. We don't incline to that anymore. And all those things which we inclined to before in the lay life, you find you're going in another direction now. All that fault finding we incline towards, picking up the faults of others, we don't incline to that anymore. Instead of fault finding, the opposite of fault finding, I always think, is like gratitude. We've got so much gratitude for everybody who's helped us and looked after us in this monastery, just for being here. The gratitude of the people who've taken your food to your hut and fed you. And done it so carefully, done their very best to try and find out what you like. All the people who have cooked your breakfast or put it out, bought the food, built your huts, looked after you. Get so much gratitude towards them that we mind gets all soft and teary. And out of gratitude, we stop and the mind becomes still. Softens our mind. And when we do these inclinations, they become something which is not just a temporary thing, they become a consistent way that we deal with the phenomena which comes to our senses. They become consistent, so it doesn't matter whether we're on retreat or whether we're travelling abroad or whether we're working or whether we are in Nalamara teaching. It doesn't matter anymore. because we developed an inclination, strong inclination, which happens naturally. We don't even have to think about it, to train ourselves or to say, I am going to be restrained when I go into town. It just happens naturally. You can't stop it because you've been leading that way all the time. As the Buddha said in the sutta, it's like a great tree just leaning in one direction. Just as you see some of the trees here leaning in one direction, you know which way they're going to fall because they've been leaning that way. And just the same way that when you die, you know you're going to be leaning in that way. You're going to fall in that direction. It's obvious. You're leaning towards renunciation of the world, leaning towards peace, towards compassion, leaning towards stillness, leaning towards release. Keep leaning in that direction, not just when you die, but when you meditate. You sit still, you just lean towards peacefulness. You lean, and just the jhanas come all by themselves. You're leaning in that direction. You're leaning towards letting go, renouncing, not doing anything, giving up the doer. You're leaning towards no fault finding, but gratitude. I'm so grateful just to be able to sit. Don't care if I can't even watch the breath and if I fall asleep with sloth and torpor. I'm just so grateful to have a quiet place to sit. This is good enough for now. So grateful that if you've got sloth and torpor, Mahamoggallana had that same problem. So you're great, so grateful to be associated with one of the Buddha's great monks. And you have that sort of gratitude, no fault finding. Sort of the energies come up, peace comes up. Because as I said in one of the first talks here, all the energy is going into the knowing instead of the doing. The fault finding, managing, changing this, doing that. You're just knowing. Without doing anything, so grateful just to be here. So grateful if you get into the present moment. Oh, it's so nice. I've got to this beautiful stage of meditation, the basic first stage, and I'm there. Wow. I mean, monk 29 years now. 29 years as a monk for me. I'm now in the first stage of my basic method, present moment awareness. Oh, this is so wonderful. If I do things like that, just all the other stages just come all by themselves. I'm not fault-finding, I'm at peace, I'm letting go, I'm accepting, I'm still. Well, you haven't got gratitude, it's always expectations, wanting something more. That's unfortunately the problem with many Westerners. Always wanting something more, wanting the nimittas, wanting the jhanas. You get first jhana, no, it's not good enough, I want second. I'm streaming now, it's not good enough, I want to be anagami. Anagami now, I want to be arahat. Arahat now, it's not good enough, I want the psychic powers. Whatever it is, that sort of wanting something more is the problem there. We have gratitude, just be so happy that we're a monk in this life, for those of you who are monks. Just doing that much, if you don't get jhanas, you don't get to be a stream winner. Just the fact you're a monk, you're building up the paramis. The paramitas, the spiritual qualities. Maybe not this life, but you're certainly making a huge inclination for future lives. So you're not losing anything. You're gaining so much. You should be so happy and so proud and so feeling good at yourself that you're just a monk or just an anagarika or just a lay person for 3 months in this monastery. Well done. You've inclined towards something beautiful. And that inclination can only grow. It grows and grows and grows. Who knows how long it will take? But you know it's only a matter of time. Just as, what does the Buddha say in Sanyutta? Just as the Ganges slopes and inclines towards the east, towards the ocean. So too, after a while, we just incline and slope towards liberation. Towards peace, towards freedom. This is what happens. Just the mind sees just a taste of freedom. It has this almost intuitive grasp. It can actually get there, can't see it maybe, but you know that this is the right direction. You lean and incline and lean and incline. It's only a matter of time. This is what happens. Just after a while, just the mind gets more and more peaceful. More and more free, more blissful, the Dhamma becomes clearer and clearer. You incline more and more. It's just like the little stream in the Himalayas. It's now a river. You incline more and more, and then you start to getting all these stages of jhanas and enlightenment, and then you're just like this big expanse of river, like the Ganges close to its mouth. And you split up on the delta, just helping so many sentient beings. Before you reach the ocean, Nibbana, gone forever. This is the inclination of the mind, the inclination of the person. So this little talk, which I never knew what I was going to talk about this evening, is just about making sure that all those inclinations which you built up during this 3 months range retreat, keep them strong, keep inclining in that direction. You find that there will be no difference between range retreat and out of the range retreat. Still keep on going. But if during the 3 months range retreat you've inclined in the wrong direction, forcing your meditation, whatever, you'll find that those inclinations will be there afterwards. And that's why range retreat is difficult, outside is difficult. For the wise, skillful, well-trained ones, it doesn't really matter so much. Whether you're working, you're just building up the good karma, building up the letting go, building up all the wonderful, delightful things, so that when you stop, you can meditate so deeply. Nothing is lost. We're living the life which the Buddha laid down and encouraged. Life of renunciation, sometimes of service. Renouncing ourselves. That inclination can only lead to one place, and that is Nibbana. So, please incline more and more and more. Just like the tree which leans over until it leans over so far that it falls. And there's another area in the world. So that's the talk this evening about inclining the mind to Nibbana.
Satipano,